Kolick a little while ago.
You watch him now on the screen.
It's bad ball. It's bad football.
That was Chip Bellet, number 61.
I guess.
Speak up, please.
Get you some of that, Jalen Tabor!
Is that good enough for you?
I'm almost embarrassed.
You can be miserable, but they are going to be miserable with you.
I said what I said.
We have to score.
What an exciting time in America.
And here he is, having the time of his life.
Don't clap. That could be tough. Don't clap.
Is on my mind or
no? What? Who the hell cares about Georgia?
They won the SEC championship. They're SEC champions.
No, well, listen. I know who I work for and work with, and I'm not really interested in ticking off All Barn Radio at 7 in the morning. Then again, I got Alabama playing, so here we go. Alabama did it, Cole. They destroyed all the odds makers. They got past all the ESPN naysayers. Everybody that was clearly biased against Alabama, they got past them all. And that's thanks to this committee.
There's a lot of things that happened over the weekend. We're going to try to cover them all today. But Alabama does get into the college football playoff. And I think the committee got it right. I think when you look at Alabama's lone loss being at Auburn against a team that was playing great football, that was hot at the time, and really handling almost every other team on their schedule, Mississippi State was competitive. But LSU finished the season in a nice way. State had a pretty good season. I don't think the resume is as bad as some people want it to be. I think when you look at overall opponent record, the differential there is not what some people want you to believe. It's not as strong as Clemson's. It's not as strong as Ohio State's even, or Georgia's. But it's not like it was a miserable resume. It's like it was Wisconsin's resume, if you're going to just talk resume.
Yeah.
But Alabama handled teams the way that they were supposed to. And I think when you look at talent, you look at players, you look at ability, you look at scheme, all those things together, Alabama's one of the four best teams in the country, and they deserve to be in my opinion. Ohio State, a team that just had so many letdowns, makes mistakes at opportune times, and those are some of the reasons that I think this committee was confident in putting Alabama in. But back to that SEC championship game, and I think this brings a lot of intrigue into this first matchup. What a plan by Jim Chaney. What a job done by Sam Matthews, the offensive line coach for the Georgia Bulldogs. They attacked the perimeter. They went at the edge of that Auburn defense, a place that they saw Alabama had a little bit of success, and realized that that's where they needed to be home, and they needed to make a living there, and they did it, and they were successful. Defensively, Roquan Smith just all over the place. And an impressive performance on both sides of the ball. No Kerryon Johnson made maybe a bigger impact than I expected. I thought Auburn could win the game without him. I thought Auburn would alter their plan a little bit earlier than they did. And Arky, last week we talked about this. I said that if Kerryon was not 100% or was not able to be truly effective, that plan for Auburn was going to have to change. And they were going to have to go to quick passes. They were going to have to run the football through the air. And I thought Jarrett Stidham was a little bit off his game because some of those throws were there. You saw some leaks to Ryan Davis. You saw some quick outlets to Hastings, and he just wasn't able to connect on some of those throws. There was an incompletion to Cam Martin, an incompletion to Ryan Davis, kind of out in the flat, quick throws. They weren't able to connect on those, and those were throws that needed to essentially be handoffs from a percentage of success standpoint. And when you throw incompletions on those passes, you kill drives, and you can't sustain that. And that's one of the big issues that hit Auburn once they realized, I think, Kerryon wasn't going to be able to be the guy in that game. I was impressed that Johnson was able to give it a go. He went out there and tried to help his team. The fumble was unfortunate. That's his first fumble of the season. You know, I just think he kind of got caught going down. He was tripped up a little bit, stumbling, and you had a defender put a hand on the ball, and the ball pops out. But turnovers absolutely killed this team. The sack fumble was big. Auburn had a chance to at least tack three on there and sort of make it a little bit of a different game, add some pressure to the Georgia offense. Weren't able to come away with points there. But I give a lot of credit to Georgia with their plan on both sides. Both sides of the ball. I think they realized early that Kerryon Johnson wasn't going to be impactful, so they decided to add pressure. They were going to come after Jared Stidham. They're going to try to make him uncomfortable. They did that. And without a heavy-duty running game, the Auburn offense was different and weren't able to really consistently get things going.
Yeah, you know what? I thought it was a great game plan from both sides. I think Georgia made great adjustments defensively because Jared Stidham opened up that game on fire. I think he was 8 of his first 8.
Yeah, he had some nice throws early.
He was slanging it. And they decided to not let him do that. They decided to give pressure and to try to make Auburn's offensive line block more than they're used to blocking as far as total number of bodies. And they forced Kerryon Johnson when he was in there to stay in and block. They forced Cam Martin when he's in there to try to stay in and block. They forced tight ends to try to chip. They tried to force Chandler Cox to come in there and chip, and they weren't able to do an effective job the entire time. And once they made that adjustment in the second quarter, especially, it looked like Auburn was struggling for the most part to be able to complete the down the field balls. Now, they did a great job of covering on Darius Slayton. He wasn't able to get loose for Auburn. They did a great job of rattling Jarrett Stidham, especially in the second half. But I didn't think the game plan for Auburn was that bad. I didn't think it was bad at all, actually, because Auburn had opportunities. I didn't think this game was ever going to be 40-17 again. I thought you caught lightning in a bottle being at home in that game to be able to win that by 23 points. That's not something that's going to happen again on the road. These two teams are too good. These two teams are too consistent. These two teams have too many good coaches on both sides of the ball, and especially for Georgia to be able to adjust. I thought offensively, they had a really nice game plan. You saw a bunch of the toss sweeps early. One toss sweep ended up leading to a wide-open touchdown to Isaac Nada that basically got every Auburn defender to bite early. But you're right. It's turnovers. Turnovers destroyed Auburn's chances to win this game. I mean, Cole, this game was 13-7 to start the fourth quarter. And yeah. Kerryon Johnson, that's when he fumbled near midfield. Auburn wasn't out of the game. Auburn fumbled their way out of a field goal opportunity earlier. Auburn got a field goal opportunity blocked. Auburn may not have been able to punch the ball in the end zone, but that game was not setting up to be a 28-7 game. That game was setting up to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 20-16.
Yeah.
I mean, it was setting up to be a close nail-biter at the end, but those turnovers did it. Those turnovers absolutely killed them.
And a couple big plays, too.
A lot of penalties, too, in that game, too. A lot of penalties.
Yeah. And Georgia had the time of possession 33 minutes to 27 minutes. So it wasn't that big of a differential, but it did feel like the Auburn defense was on the field way too much in that game.
They were on the field a lot.
They did look gassed late in that game.
Especially the second half. They were on the field a lot in that third quarter.
And then a part of that third down efficiency, Auburn just 4 of 13 on third downs. Even though Georgia only 2 of 11, they were able to sustain drives. They didn't have to get to a lot of third downs in order to keep drives going. 238 rushing yards for Georgia, and just an impressive performance. The most Auburn's given up on the ground since the Iron Bowl in 2015. This team looked great, and this coaching staff proved that they are – great with game plans, adjustments, and figuring out how to alter their weaknesses going into a rematch. 2 turnovers for Auburn, the rushing differential, obviously the difference in this game. So you look at Georgia moving forward, and you brought it up earlier. If there is a potential blowout in this college football playoff, where do I see it? Part of me wants to say Georgia and Oklahoma. But I actually think it could go either way. Because if Georgia can come up with some sort of a plan to neutralize Oklahoma's defense, and because they are so reliant on Baker Mayfield, I do think that that's possible. If you can find a way to force him into some turnovers and force him into being uncomfortable, I do think you can change the dynamic of their football team. But they got a big boy tight end. They got a big boy tailback. They got good receivers. They have a great offensive line. I'm not sure anybody wants any of that Oklahoma offense right now. But it does appear as though Baker Mayfield ad-libs on his own a lot, gets off script a lot, and maneuvers a lot. And if he's not doing those things, are they an offense that can consistently hurt you? And there is zero doubt in my mind that Georgia can control possession, move the football on the ground, and sort of change the dynamic of the tempo of that game. They can turn that into a very slow game, in my opinion.
I think they can. I also cannot wait to see how Roquan Smith plays in this game. I mean, Roquan Smith played out of his mind.
Oh, he was everywhere.
And I think Roquan Smith's the defensive player of the year in the SEC.
I think Roquan Smith should be in New York.
Well, I mean, it's high praise. Roquan has had a tremendous year. And a lot of people give Baker Mayfield a great year. You've been in love with Minkah Fitzpatrick being one of the best football players. Lamar Jackson's had a great year. Kerryon had a good year. And I'm not talking about just Heisman at this point. But I think Roquan Smith's the defensive player of the year in the SEC.
No, I don't think there's any question.
You don't think there's a question?
There's no question about it, no.
I think he has been so good for so long. And I know some people liked him a lot coming into this year. He was at SEC Media Days. The coaches think he's well-spoken and well-thought-of and a leader on this team.
Let me stop you right there real quick.
He is blown up.
Talking to him and talking to Nick Chubb when I had Georgia against Missouri earlier this year, if you have a chance to sit down with those two, there's no way you're disappointed to see Georgia win this SEC championship. Because Chubb, a guy like Lorenzo Carter and a couple other kids on that team that didn't have to come back, that did, and wanted to do it for this reason – it makes you kind of feel good for them. And Roquan Smith, one of the more impressive young men that I've talked to in the last few years in the SEC, a great kid, a great individual. And I was happy for him and happy for Chubb because those are happy for Mel Tucker. I don't think he gets enough credit for what that defense does because it's similar to what happened with Kirby early on in Alabama. People just said, oh, this is Saban's defense. Oh, this is Saban's defense. Mel Tucker does a lot for that defense. And I think people just say, oh, well, Kirby Smart's defensive guy. He's the one that puts this together. And I think Mel Tucker deserves a lot more credit than he gets. Let's get to 10 After Tweets, brought to you by First Family Mortgage. Go to 1FMC.com.
Bring me the tweets!
All right, I'm going to go back a little bit here to some stuff that happened late last week. Mark Schlabaugh tweeted December 1st, Jimbo Fisher has resigned as FSU's coach and will be named the new coach at Texas A&M. Sources told ESPN he will not coach in Saturday's regular season finale against Louisiana Monroe. FSU is planning a news conference for this afternoon.
Let's stop before, because I know there's more news on that. Just real quick, how shocked were you that he resigned the day before a game?
I mean, that thing got sideways in a hurry. That thing got sideways really fast.
I mean, could even make it through the Saturday morning game.
Yeah, that was an 11 o'clock kick.
What,
I mean,
the
he could have been. He could have been on his way to College Station at 4 p.m. if he wanted.
Just, wow.
Matthew Talton tweets at CoCubic, I'm starting to think this UT head coaching job may be VFL. Vacant for life.
Oh.
It's good. It's good.
I think Philip Fulmer will take that job before it goes vacant for life.
Mark Cooper tweets December 1st. Breaking! Mike Gundy's salary to increase to $5 million in 2018. Oak State Board of Regents approves an addendum to his contract this morning. He just got bumped like 6 months ago. And now he got another one.
Do it again. Let's do it again.
All right. We mentioned some of the Ole Miss stuff last week.
Yeah, it broke on the show. We rarely get that breaking news, but we got it.
Mark Schlabaugh tweets December 1st, Ole Miss officials say they'll appeal postseason ban for 2018. Quote, the additional postseason ban is excessive and does not take into account the corrective actions that we have made in personnel structure policies and processes to address the issue. I feel like that's kind of a bad idea, but hey,
let me just say this. Surprised only 1 year show cause for Hugh Freeze?
Yes.
Only a 1 year show cause for this guy, which the NCAA said that he promoted an atmosphere of compliance, but he did failure to monitor his staff.
Yeah, Zach Barnett tweets, but somehow Hugh Freeze got slapped on the wrist with a feather. I don't know if I would go.
If someone wanted to hire him before January 1 next year, they could. He'd have to sit out the first two conference games. But January 2nd, or January 1 next year, not this coming January 1, but the next January 1, he can get a job. Anywhere they want. Jared Sill, Eddie_Beast_, tweets, Ed Arkishay just called him Wokron Smith. Love it. Play as Woke.
He's a really good player.
Some people get my jokes. Some people don't. I'll tell you this. Roquan is going to win all kinds of awards this offseason.
At AUSE7EN tweets, I've never seen at Danny Werfel and at Cole Kubik in the same room, ever. Emoji head exploding.
Okay, hold on.
We don't look that
alike. This feels racist. Two bald white guys? Is this what we're talking about?
We don't look that similar.
Hey,
Stop it.
Soon before you get the SEC Legends Award before the SEC Championship?
Never.
Like 4 years? 5 years?
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
I mean, you played two SEC Championship games. How many players could have done that before 2000?
Exactly. All right, we will get to a break. When we come back, Brandon Marcello gives us details on a new contract for Gus Malzahn right after this. Welcome back to the Cube Show, Sports Radio 730 and 103.9 The Ump. Brandon Marcello joining us now to discuss a new contract for Gus Malzahn. Brandon was first to report this yesterday. He's an editor and senior writer for 247 Sports. You can see his work at auburn.247sports.com. Follow him on Twitter at @BMarcello. Brandon, good morning. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. What details have you learned about this contract extension for Gus Malzahn since yesterday?
Well, not a lot of details. I mean, it sounds like, based off what we're hearing, is that it's going to be a 7-year deal, $49 million, kind of a multi-tier deal where he won't necessarily be making $7 million per year, but it'll be by the end of the contract, he'll be making more than $7 million per year. I think the biggest thing is going to be when we find out the exact figures as far as the buyout and the guaranteed money in the contract. I know, obviously, a lot of folks have been talking about Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M with his new contract, the 10-year, $75 million deal, and how all that money is guaranteed. I don't believe all the money is going to be guaranteed for Gus Malzahn as far as a buyout at Auburn. And it's going to be interesting to see exactly how much money is guaranteed. I think that was a kind of a sticking point during the contract negotiations over the last few days. And, of course, things that will probably not be in that contract but were discussed are athletics facilities and kind of the promises there to help upgrade some things for Gus Malzahn in the football program.
Brandon, who put this together? Who got this done? Because there are a lot of people who would say Jay Jacobs, his hands were off of this and he didn't have anything to do with this. I mean, this is obviously something that, from an organizational standpoint, a lot of people would need to come together on. Behind the scenes, how did this get done and who was responsible for this getting done, in your opinion?
I think Stephen Leith had a lot to do with it. He's been front and center quite a bit with athletics here in the last month or two. And, last night he even made sure to be front and center on this. He released a statement concerning the deal, which is, they say, still being finalized, but the broad terms have been agreed upon as they try to work out the contract. But, as you said, Stephen Leith's office said that Jay Jacobs would handle these negotiations, but I've been told that anything would be really handled by the president and his staff, and that really definitely appears to be what's been the case just over these last, I'd say, goodness, it's now Monday, 4 days or so.
Brandon Marcello joining us. Do you think that this may give any indication to there's a pretty good idea of who the next athletic director will be? And if not, how much was that part of this maybe discussed behind the scenes with Valzon?
I don't think it was discussed too much, though I'm sure Gus wants a voice involved with that. But I don't believe it was something that was, hey, also you're going to be involved in the search process or anything like that, or here are the final two candidates or whatever along those lines, and, you know, who do you prefer or whatever. I don't believe that was a major sticking point at all in this decision.
Brandon Marcello of 247 Sports joining us now, talking a new contract for Gus Malzahn. How long do you think this had been in the works?
Yeah, that's a good question. Based on kind of what I heard, it really kind of was something that has only been really discussed as far as from Gus Malzahn's folks over the last few days. Now, Auburn's been preparing and trying, at least internally, to get ready for potential contract negotiations and discussions well before the Arkansas rumors started. But I think it actually really got serious, last week. And then finally, they were able to hammer something out Sunday. I think it was very comparable to kind of what happened 4 years ago on this, I guess, Malzahn's first contract negotiations, where that was actually initiated by Malzahn himself, whereas this, Auburn had to kind of be proactive a little bit and start figuring things out. If you remember 4 years ago, they almost pretty much worked something out on a notepad. It was kind of like, this is what I want. Can you give me this? And that was it. And there was agreed upon, and it was kind of a handshake deal. This is kind of similar, but maybe more in an official capacity with the president's office being more involved.
So how real was the flirtation with Arkansas by Gus Malzahn, in your opinion?
They were coming for him. Did they actually offer him officially? You know, they never offer someone officially unless they know they're coming. Now, there were certainly numbers discussed behind the scenes with Malzahn's people and everything, but it was very real. And Arkansas was hoping to hear something yesterday. My understanding is that they interviewed at least one other person actually yesterday morning when Malzahn was still on the table in their eyes, but they were already starting to kind of make backup plans just in case it didn't work out. But obviously they've had to move on since then, but I believe Arkansas was really in it, and folks at Arkansas and also the folks that the Malzahns knew in Northwest Arkansas believe that there was a very good shot that they were going to get him, and that they were not using this as a negotiating play at Auburn, excuse me.
Do you believe some of the numbers being tossed around were accurate? 6 years, $36 million, and if not, maybe a little north of that?
At Arkansas?
Correct, yeah, at Arkansas. You think they're really ready to put that kind of money towards a new head football coach?
Yeah, I think so. The numbers I heard at one point last week was somewhere around $6.5 million a year. And then, of course, I think CBS Sports yesterday, and I wasn't able to confirm this independently, but CBS Sports reported that Arkansas was prepared to go as high as about $7.1 million per year. But last week I heard $6.5 million. I think Arkansas was very serious. If it was the person that they really wanted was a number one choice, someone that was proven, obviously with Gus Malzahn's ties to the state, they kind of saw it as a perfect fit. Boosters there made it very clear to the administration that they wanted Gus, even in the week or two before Brett Bielema was fired there. And that kind of got the wheels in motion. But they were prepared to kind of back up everything and say, Gus, come home, come back to Arkansas, and we're going to make you one of the top three paid coaches in the SEC and definitely one of the top paid coaches in the country. And I think for Malzahn, it was interesting, not necessarily just to go back home, so to speak, but the guaranteed money and feeling more safe and secure somewhere. And Auburn, I guess to their credit, was able to do something in a very similar fashion and do so quickly over these last few days to make Malzahn feel much more secure in his spot with a seven-year deal.
Brandon Marcello with us of 247 Sports. Follow him on Twitter, at BMarcello. You mentioned that facilities, not necessarily in the contract, but was a point of discussion with this. What's next in line of facilities for Auburn Athletics and Auburn football in particular? We know the new recruiting lounge, and which will also act as the new press box, is being erected outside Jordan-Hare Stadium. What needs to be done? What can be done? What is next on that list?
Done, but I know for Malzahn, one of the big things is going to be a football complex, a new football complex for him. Obviously, here in the last 3 years, 4 years, there has been some discussions about whether to renovate the current building or building a new facility for football. It was always seen as something far in the future. Gus Malzahn, back in 2013, his first major contract negotiations, was asked if he wanted anything new. And at the time, he said he was happy with everything. And obviously, nothing moved forward. This time around, I know that Malzahn, here in the last year, 2 years, actually, he's really kind of wanted a football complex, and he's made that known in the background. He hasn't said it publicly, but that is something that is definitely on the horizon now with these after this contract negotiation, is him getting his own football complex for the football program. Now, as far as any renovations at Jordan-Hare Stadium, I haven't heard anything along those lines, but I believe Malzahn is going to get what he wants as far as getting a football complex here, ramping that up here in the next few years.
What about assistance and assistant pay? Was that something that was a part of this deal?
Yeah, that's something that was brought up. Obviously, it's not something that they put in writing, but, several assistants right now, they have deals that are ending at the end of this year or the next 2 years, actually. And Gus Malzahn has been promised to kind of given one, some raises to some folks and a bigger salary pool for his assistant coaches. I also believe that Gus Malzahn is going to have more say and control, so to speak, over who he hires. If you remember when he hired Chip Lindsey, I was told that he was told in so many terms that do not hire Chip Lindsey. And he said that's who I'm going to hire, and it didn't really set well with some people and in the administration. But Malzahn made a decision. It's obviously worked out. And going forward, Malzahn's going to have more autonomy when those decisions are to be made. I think that's the biggest thing for him. One, he's got the security with a bigger buyout, but also he's going to be more of a, I guess you could say, have a general manager kind of deal with his program, where he's going to have a lot of say-so without a lot of the outside influence.
Brandon Marcello with us of 247 Sports, at BMarcello via Twitter. I know this this 10th assistant coach is coming up here in about a month, I guess. Do you have any idea what direction Gus Malzahn may want to go with that hire?
Last I heard of it about this summer was that there was a real big push within the staff to add someone on defense who could also maybe help out with some special teams. Who that could be, I believe, is still being worked out. But I do believe Malzahn's going to be identifying, if he hasn't already, a few candidates for that position. I heard a name last night, but I was unable to really confirm it, that there was anything to that. But I believe that the next person that they add to the staff will likely be someone that's involved with defense or someone that's maybe involved with special teams or both.
Brandon, great stuff, man. Really appreciate the time. Well done reporting this by you yesterday. First to get to it, and we look forward to catching up with you soon. Brandon Marcello of 247 Sports there talking about an extension for Gus Malzahn. 7 years, $49 million. Brandon saying that it doesn't exactly equate to seven per moving forward, but by the end of the deal, he could be making north of $7 million per year. You think this is a good move by Auburn?
I'm interested to see what the numbers will be when they obviously come out. Good move by Auburn. Yeah, I think it's a good move by Auburn. To be able to have a coach, no matter the situation, that has beaten Alabama twice. Again, we're talking about how his record against rivals wasn't that good coming in. What changed a little bit this year? He won two of the three matchups against rivals, and one was the repeat and got to the championship game. I think to get any kind of coaching stability in there when an offense looks like it is starting to see the light, and I think it's more the offense, or less the offense, more the player that is there, meaning Jarrett Stidham, the guy that can run an offense like that, that can hit the throws like that. I think that clearly helped. Jarrett Stidham just made Gus Malzahn a whole bunch of money. I mean, let's be fair about it. This is a Jarrett Stidham contract raise that Gus Malzahn just got. He turned this offense into something that it had not been before because he could do what Sean White couldn't do. Sean White almost got Gus Malzahn fired. Jarrett Stidham saved his job and got him a contract raise. But I was always interested to see how much Arkansas would be willing to pony up, because let's think about this logically. Any one of these SEC programs that cares that much can pay these guys almost whatever they want.
True.
If they wanted to pay Gus Malzahn $10 a year, they could. It's just how far would they be willing to go?
Yeah.
And I thought the one thing that always that stuck with me ever since I heard it last week, when Gus Malzahn talked about the stability that they had created at Auburn, and they had been as stable as they have been since he's been there, for some reason that just stuck with me. To say that sounds like what a guy who likes where he's at says, not a guy who is looking to leave. Because if you're looking to leave, I don't think you even care about to even bring up the stability. I just thought he liked what he did. And when people talked about how he didn't unequivocally state, I will be the head coach at Auburn next year, you're going to have to drag me out in a pine box. We've had coaches lie about that before.
Yeah.
So I think all that was just posturing. I think he was just playing his leverage.
Well,
and getting the deal he wanted.
And here's the thing.
He kind of did say he wanted to be at Auburn. He just didn't say in the words you wanted.
Right. And you're only as valuable as your options. And if Arkansas is ready to spend $50 million total, whatever, on Gus Malzahn, then you're going to have to step up if you want to keep your coach and you want to keep that stability. I think from a stability standpoint moving forward, it's a very good move for Auburn. I agree with you that we get a little bit carried away with the money because these athletic departments can't afford it. No one's bankrupting them. I mean, Texas A&M is not going to be, you know, looking to come up with a couple more advertising gimmicks to be able to make ends meet.
I think they can make $8 million in 1 year.
I think they're going to be okay. They can figure that out.
$75 million today.
They're going to be all right there. Now, the whole guaranteed money thing for 10 is wow. But,
they're going to be at least a coach for three.
These coaches can afford it. I think Gus Malzahn has a good staff in place. I think they have a chance to have a solid roster returning next year. Is it going to be one of the best in the SEC? Top five? I don't think it'll be top three because I think Kerryon Johnson has to go. Jeff Holland could go. Carlton Davis, whatever we figure out what happened in that game, because I don't think he got hurt. I mean, the way Allie LaForce reported that deal seemed like something shady was going on. I don't know if he had a locker room blow up or whatever happened, but after he got that penalty, I don't think he returned to the game and he wasn't hurt, or she would have reported that he was hurt. He could go because he had a great year. So you got some underclassmen that could go. The offensive line's not going to be in good shape. D-line's going to be in great shape. Some people think Deshaun Davis leaves. I don't see that. Linebackers should be in pretty good shape. The secondary, I think corner, even losing Carlton Davis, is still in good shape. He had some guys play some good football. You have to maneuver some things around at safety. That was a problem this year. Running back offensive line could be a problem for Auburn next year. But if they expand the offense and open some things up, it's a young, talented group of receivers that could help offset that. So you got the staff. You got a pretty good roster. Recruiting seems to be going well again this year. The only thing you seem to be missing is that stability. And for me, the reason that I said on Bo Mattingly's show Friday that I thought if Auburn lost this game, he would leave, I didn't think Auburn had the leadership in place behind the scenes to be able to get a deal like this done. And Stephen Leith is still new. Keep in mind. I mean, he was hired in, what, June?
Yeah,
he's to be Auburn's president. He hasn't been around very long. So my confidence level in him being able to go get a deal like this done right away, especially if some of the boosters weren't on board with Malzahn anymore, wasn't very high. You don't have an athletic director. You're not sure who your new athletic director is going to be. I know Jay is acting as that, but he said he's out. So I would assume they're not allowing Jay to handle this deal. So for me, it was more of, okay, if Arkansas is going to attack and put the full court press on and offer six and a half a year or a contract total of $50 million, can Auburn counter that? And if you're Gus Malzahn, that's life-changing money. Do you walk away from that? Do you leave that on the table? Even though you know Auburn is a better job. No one's debating that. I would never get into that discussion with anyone because it's not a real talk. But I wasn't sure that Auburn had the leadership behind the scenes to be able to make this deal happen. And I do think it's good for Auburn football. Is Gus Malzahn a perfect coach? No. Does he need to continue to grow and morph and find a way to get better? Yes. And I think he has some people on staff now that hopefully can continue to help him do that. The athletic director will be big in that. I think an athletic director that can come in, can sit him down and say, hey, we need to try and figure out a way to do this, and you need to improve, and you need to get better, and you need to work on this aspect of running your football team, could be a big benefit to him. So if that's the case, then I think it's a really good move for Auburn. I just didn't have the confidence that the leadership was in place to be able to counter a massive, massive deal that I do know for a fact was on the table from Arkansas.
It's going to be hilarious to see the new athletic director come in after the head coach has been extended for big money and say, here's how you, what you got to do to get better. It's going to be funny to see how that dynamic comes down if that's what happens. I'll tell you this, though. For what your reason is saying about this leadership, I think that's one of the reasons it did happen. Because you have a new guy at president. You have you don't have an athletic director that's going to be making the deal that you don't have a good old boy in Jay Jacobs that was negotiating this deal. I think you had a new set of eyes looking at what Gus Malzahn was doing at, from that leadership level. Now, as far as the fact that the boosters, how deep they got into it, how much they cared, and how much they were wanting to get rid of Malzahn, I don't know that for certain. I kind of thought because that you had new eyes looking at this is the reason this was able to get done quickly. Because, again, you also had to look at who's the new guy you wanted, yeah. If not. And I think Gus Malzahn showed improvement enough this year, except in special teams, to warrant him staying and wanting to up him. Now, it came at a pretty good time as far as getting mega cash.
True. All right, we'll get to a break, come back, and talk more coaching maneuvers from over the weekend. Some hired, some fired, some getting paid boatloads of cash. We'll talk coaching changes next. Welcome back in, Cube Show Sports Radio, 730 and 103.9 The Ump. I'm going to tell you guys about our friends at Valley Equipment. Go to valleyequipmentrents.com, valleyequipmentrents.com, or call 256-964-6081. Ross and Taylor and the guys can get you set for all your heavy equipment needs, pressure washers, stump grinders, bulldozer, trowel machines. right there on Memorial Parkway, 3551 South Memorial Parkway near Airport Road. Listen, if it's a project in the backyard, if it's a construction site, anything that you need, Valley Equipment Rental can help you out. Cranes, scissor lifts, bulldozers, and more. Go to valleyequipmentrents.com. They're going to get you into the best piece of equipment at the best price. It's guaranteed. Valley Equipment Rental, valleyequipmentrents.com. So the coaching carousel doesn't get as wild and crazy yesterday as we sort of thought it would. Arkansas obviously now going to have to move on from Gus Malzahn. Mike Norvell being mentioned. Chad Morris being mentioned. Maybe Mike Leach being mentioned. I mean, Mike Leach seemed to be as close to a done deal as possible with John Curry in Tennessee. And then Philip Fulmer comes into the picture. Philip Fulmer, by the way, has been given a two-year deal to be Tennessee's athletic director. That is not like an interim just for this coaching search type deal. He is the athletic director.
Doesn't he go from like $100,000 that Tennessee is paying him to like $4.5 million?
And people are wondering, no, he would never stab him in the back to try to get that. There was no posturing in the background.
Philip Fulmer wasn't making $4.5 million when he left.
No. Also, like the people who are sort of defending things on Tennessee's side, saying, well, John Curry attempted to circumvent Philip Fulmer and his candidates by going and talking to Mike Leach. Why in the hell should he be listening to what Philip Fulmer says as the athletic director?
He's just a consultant for $100,000 a year.
He's doing his job. So...
That asking press conference was bizarre.
Asking you shall receive, Tennessee. What's his hashtag? Like, get on board or join the family?
There's so much stuff to happen on Twitter over the weekend. I don't even know what the proper hashtag was. What was bizarre, it looked like a coup had happened in that Friday press conference. I was watching it live, and I thought, oh, hey, this is weird. You got the chancellor, who is new, and you got the guy that used to be the head coach, went away for a while, then got hired on as a sort of a consultant who was just sitting in the chair like he just overthrew him. Like he just overthrew John Curry, which he kind of did.
Hashtag come together.
Come together. Right now. Ooh, me.
Tennessee.
There you go. Rocky.
We could make a song like the dude makes. Whatever that guy's name is that sends
the Honorable Solo D.
No, not that one. The country guy that does the same riff for 20 different Tennessee songs.
Yeah.
Well, find me a coach. Whatever the guy's name is.
By the way, you know what's funny?
Stupid.
Still need a coach.
Yeah, still do need a coach.
After all this, they still need a coach. Florida State still needs a coach. Arkansas still needs a coach.
Louisiana.
Okay.
Lafayette needs a coach. Mark Huspeth fired. Arizona State does not. Herm Edwards officially in as the Arizona State Sun Devils head football coach.
This is a disaster. This is an absolute disaster. I'm telling you right now, as God is my witness, this will end so poorly for Arizona
State. What do you
think
about the people who say, why does everyone want Gruden all the time, but then they're mad about Herm Edwards?
It's Herm Edwards. Okay, I got nothing.